Hey, Randy.
Hey.
Hope you had a nice Easter. I had a very refreshing break and I've been looking forward to recording our next interview. I hope it's someone absolutely amazing. Who have we got on?
Well, actually, despite my best efforts at an American accent, I'm not actually Randy, who's currently tied up with gaffer tape, locked in a filing cabinet behind me, as I've decided to mount a hostile takeover of this podcast. Now, I'm Jason from some other podcast you might have heard about, but I'm not going to advertise it because I don't want to steal all your listeners because, you know, once you've listen to me once, you never go back. But I guess you could call it One Night in the Product Experience. I guess I just had so much fun being interviewed the other week on this podcast that I just wanted a piece of the action. But in all seriousness, we thought that this would be a fantastic opportunity to find out a little bit more about what you think about product management, because you're always so busy talking to other people about product management. We don't really know what you think about it, apart from when you're agreeing or disagreeing with them. But, you know, we want to get a bit inside your head and find out what you think is important. So I'm game for that if you are. But the question is, are you game?
Well, okay, I'm not very good at being interviewed, but I will do my best. So listeners, this week, in case you're really confused by this, we have myself, Lily Smith, head of product at Growth at Bauer Collective, being interviewed by the one and only Jason Knight, product director at Unmind, who we've stolen today from the podcast One Night in Product. And without further ado, let's
cue the music.
Get on with the chat. The product experience is brought to you by Mind the Product.
Every week, we talk to the best product people from around the globe about how we can improve our practice and build products that people love.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and to discover an extensive library of great content and videos.
Browse for free or become a Mind the Product member to unlock premium articles, unseen videos, AMAs, roundtables, discounts to our conferences around the world, training opportunities, and more.
Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities, and there's probably one near you.
So, Lily, welcome to your own show. How does it feel to be on the other side of the mic for a change?
It feels very, very strange. And it would be great if my mic was working well, but...
Yeah, well, we have to let our listeners know that the completion of this interview may well be it's not necessarily a done deal, given the technical issues that we've had so far. But I'm assuming that this is just some kind of hazing exercise where you've basically got me on the show and you're just going to throw up a bunch of obstacles for me to get more and more frustrated by so that I never try to come back again. I've heard about people like you before, you know.
No, I'm innocent. I'm innocent, I promise.
No, that's more of a Randy play, mate. So you've been doing this for a bit. Obviously, you've recorded a bunch of episodes, and I'm sure your listeners are well used to your dulcet tones by now. But unless you've interviewed yourself before, I'm sure they might not know too much about you yourself. So why don't you give us a quick intro and tell us, like, what you're working on these days? Like, what's your day job?
Thanks, Jason. And thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
it's a delight to have you on your own podcast. I can't recommend it enough.
So I will try and give you the potted history version of my background in product. So I actually started my career out in film and TV. And like many product managers that we've interviewed on the podcast, found myself accidentally ended up in a product role. And I found my way there through, I guess, a frustration of working in the film and TV industry and just deciding that that wasn't really for me for a bunch of reasons. One of them being that I found that there was quite a lot of red tape with the politics and stuff, like working on films, like there were certain people you weren't allowed to speak to, and it was all very schmoozy and not really my cup of tea. I'm quite a sort of like, I just like to be real with everyone. And then I came back to Bath where I lived and ended up getting a job as a receptionist in a publishing company, and then ended up working through a few different roles as a PA and kind of project assistant for the digital director. And one day he said to me, we've got this massive project, we've got like 20 developers working on it, it's all going a little bit wrong. We could really do with a really good communicator on the team to work out, you know, why it's going wrong and to help with the planning and stuff. He was like, I know you're good at this stuff, so could you just go and work with these developers? And I was like, oh my goodness, this is a great opportunity, but I also have no idea what I'm doing. So I guess that was my first kind of job in tech, and I absolutely loved it. I loved working with the developers and the engineers and the designers and the operations team as well. They were really fantastic, all really smart, all really kind of willing to share their knowledge and to help me help them. And, you know, completely different experience to what I'd had in film and TV. And and I was kind of hooked from that point on. I was just loved the fact that, you know, they could write a few lines of code and then transform the way something looked. And it was all really quite quick, and that, you know, everyone really cared about the customer experience as well, and how, like, the impact that it was having. And from then on, you know, learned more about working in tech and took on more of a project manager role. But back in the day, their project management also included, you know, I was doing a lot of like wireframing and stuff like that. So it was one of those project manager roles that was kind of a product manager, really, but you didn't really have any experience.
Don't start the holy wars, Lily. Don't start the holy wars.
Exactly. You're just kind of like finding your way through all of this stuff. And worked in a bunch of different startups since then. And now I work in an e-commerce startup called Bauer Collective. It's a small team. So I'm the head of product and growth, and work across product and growth with a small, but what I like to think of as like small but elite team, you know, where everyone's like super good at their jobs. And it's, it's really nice, really nice environment to work in.
Well, that must be a refreshing change from who you have to work with on the podcast, though. So like, how did you get involved with Randy? I mean, like, did you win him in a cracker or something?
Yeah, so I think, like many product managers who are sort of learning the trade and finding their way through, I really wanted some resources to call upon in order to develop myself as a product manager. And at the time, we didn't have any meetup groups or communities in the Bristol area. So both myself and a guy called Darwin Pelton kicked off Product Tank in Bristol, really just so that I could, you know, both of us could learn more about product management and connect with other product managers in our area. And Randy came on board Product Tank in Bristol and did a talk. And we really hit it off, and, you know, we had a lot in common. And then he was starting a product podcast, and he was like, hey, do you want to do this thing? It'll just be like, you know, we'll just try it out. It'll be like a bit fun. And then classic Randy, it sort of snowballed into the into like a,
it's called scope creep.
But it was great. Like, you know, it's always been really good fun. It's been so nice getting to interview people on a weekly basis and learn from people. I think, you know, like I said, one of the things about the tech community and the product community specifically is we all are so good at helping each other, because we're all in the same position generally of like having found this role or this job that we love and that we feel passionate about, but we're not really sure if we're doing it right. And so that's how I kind of ended up doing the podcast, and yeah, never look back.
Ah, fantastic. And yeah, I think I can only echo this whole idea that we're all here to kind of help each other. I mean, on social media, that's kind of building up a bit of a head of steam kind of community that you have there. And everyone seems to be really willing to spend their time. There's a lot of people trying to do mentorship now as well. So that's really refreshing to see as well. Like, it's a really tricky job, in my opinion, and not just in my opinion, of course. And it's something where you don't necessarily have a lot of natural allies in the companies that you're working with as well. Like, it's a fairly misunderstood position or misunderstood function within a company, which for me makes it only more important to use those networks and use those peers and all the other people that are giving their time and their support, because Otherwise, you just end up kind of in a bit of an echo chamber, not really able to see the wood for the trees. So absolutely agree with that. But let's talk about doing the job right, because I know that's really why we're here. And obviously, we're taking advantage of the fact that we don't have Randy dragging us down, so we can actually talk about doing stuff right, properly right, not the way he'd want to do it. So we love you really, Randy. So we're going to talk about a little bit about what makes a good product manager. So I guess the best way to do that would be to say, hey, Lily, in your opinion, what does make a good product manager?
Yeah, and I kind of cheated as well, because I was like, I don't really want to be interviewed because I love asking other people questions. So I'm going to ask you the same question.
Hey, this is unacceptable. This wasn't in the contract.
But I'm happy to kick us off. And I think, you know, one of the sort of light bulb moments for me in my career was coming across that classic article of good product manager, bad product manager. And I think that is, it covers a lot of what a product manager should do and what they shouldn't do and like who they should be working with. So like, definitely if you're interested in how to be a great product manager, you should read that if you haven't read it already. But when I was thinking about it from like my perspective of what makes a good product manager, and I realized that this is, you know, very much my perspective and could be very different for other people who have worked in different types of organizations. Like I'm aware that I've worked more in startups and smaller organizations. So, but yeah, the first thing that springs to mind is like a real foundational knowledge of business technology and design. That's
the old Venn diagram.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it would be very hard to do the product management job well without that foundational knowledge within business technology and design. It's not impossible, and you can still do, you know, you can still do a job, but being able to understand business, and this is for me in the roles that I've had, it's really kind of getting to grips with the business model and the financial model. So, you know, what the costs are, what your cost per acquisition is, like, you know, what your margins are, all of that kind of stuff, and where you need to make an impact, and how the business is going to grow and what that growth looks like over time. And also understanding things like EBITDA and stuff like that, not kind of to a financial degree level or an accountancy level, but just the basics. And, you know, understanding different types of business model as well. So like a freemium service, or if you're in a SaaS business, or subscription, or, you know, whatever it is, like foundational knowledge across all of those things and just understanding. And I think you can get that by really building close relationships with the commercial people within your business, yeah. Whether that is your financial director or your sales teams, or your if you have a commercial director or whatever it is, the people who kind of really understand the numbers in the business, and sitting down with them on a regular basis to try and understand like what's going on from a business point of view is like really a really good way. And also just, you know, asking for access to the financial model so that you can pull it apart and play around with it and try different things out. And then building business cases for specific features or functionality. So at GoCompare, I had to do a lot around incentives. And then we had to model, you know, the cost of a certain incentive and what impact we would need that to have on the basic business metrics. And that was like a really complex sort of financial modeling task, and probably not one that you would necessarily expect to do as a product manager, but it's like so, so helpful for you to then understand how the business works. And then from a technology perspective, you know, really similarly, like understanding some of the basics of the technology and the business that you're working with. So what does the data model look like? How does the data flow through the business? What's the architecture look like? And these are the questions that I ask whenever I start in a new company, is to really kind of understand like how everything comes together. And, you know, you don't necessarily need to have a degree in computer science or like programming or anything, and I don't have a degree in that or a degree in finance. But I do ask people lots of questions and I like to be able to understand things. So I'm notoriously good/bad at asking questions until I really feel like I've understood what's going on. And then from a design perspective, you know, just understanding like all of the different customer personas that you have and the different types of customer that you have and the journeys that they go on and the experiences that they have, like all through to, you know, CRM or customer support and stuff like that, and really taking an interest into that holistic experience that the customers have as well.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think I can only echo the general sentiment there, the idea that, I mean, we sit there and we say, okay, well, product managers, good product managers, they need to be really user focused, or in some cases, people will say user obsessed, which sounds a little creepy. But basically, they need to have a really strong understanding of the users, what they're going after, the problems they have, all of that stuff. But in most companies, probably all, but let's say most, just in case anyone writes in. Can they write in? But anyway, so in most companies, you're not going to be able to serve those users unless you have really good relationships with the rest of the team. So basically everything that you just said. And one of the things that I like to recommend product managers to do, whether they be foundational or in product leadership or wherever else, is like, there's a big bunch of books that everyone's always talking about reading with regards to, you know, your Inspireds and your Continuous Discovery Habits and all the other books. And, you know, you absolutely should read those books, but pick up a book about sales every now and then if you're in B2B. Pick up a book about marketing. I mean, marketing arguably is a little bit closer to product management conceptually. Like, I think people get, you know, product managers get marketing a little bit more because it's so closely linked. Certainly product marketing, maybe not so much like brand marketing or event marketing or anything like that. But like, pick up an engineering book, pick up books from these different disciplines, pick up a financial book. I've got one behind me. I bought it on a whim, like Financial Intelligence for Entrepreneurs. I'm not an entrepreneur, sadly. You know, maybe I will be one day, but so far I just work for the man. And technically speaking, as you put it, like, do I need to know what EBITDA means to prioritize a backlog or to run a one-to-one or to build a product strategy? I mean, kind of not, but at the same time, if I don't know what the motivations are and the success metrics and the kind of even the compensation of some of the people that I'm working with, then I'm going to have a very difficult time empathizing with maybe some of the things that they find important or some of the pushback that they give me on some of the things that maybe I don't naturally get. I'm not just saying that those people should come to us entirely. Like, we have to go to them as well, basically, to make sure that we all kind of meet each other, not necessarily in the middle, but just somewhere, not at one side or the other. So I completely agree with all that. All right, so we've violently agreed on that one. I'm hoping we're going to get to the end of this interview with at least one violent disagreement. But what's another thing that you think is a characteristic of a really good product manager?
Okay, so number two on my list is something which is very, I feel quite strongly about, and possibly, again, like I said, because of my experiences of working in startups, but it's a desire for clarity and purpose amidst uncertainty and sometimes chaos. So it's this kind of like seeing stuff as being uncertain and possibly chaotic and reveling in wanting to like bring clarity and purpose to that thing. And for me, this really came to the fore when I was doing more of that project management role of, you know, owning the delivery of things, but really kind of going, hang on, are we building the right thing? Like, is this really going to have the impact that we think it's going to have?
Yeah.
Or, you know, early days kind of product management where you're kind of not really doing product management, but you're tactically delivering product features or whatever, and you don't have the strategy in front of you. So you're not really sure where you're headed from a strategic point of view. And you don't really understand or have that full picture of like, this is what we want to achieve for the next, you know, 1 to 3 to 5 to 10 years. And this is how we're going to achieve that. And so it's really, you know, recognizing that that clarity isn't there and how teams struggle, because it's not just the product manager that struggles. I think everyone struggles in that sort of situation. Some people are more kind of happy to just deliver things that they're given. But I think even those people who are more kind of delivery focused thrive so much stronger in an environment where they have clarity and purpose. And so being that person who champions the need for that within the business, I think is like super important for product management. So that's my number two. Tell me what you think, and also tell me what your number two is.
I mean, I agree that that is a very strong characteristic, especially of maybe earlier startups, like you say, or scale-ups that are maybe a little bit uncertain about how things work or how to scale and all of that stuff. I mean, obviously the dark side of that is when you get too big, you end up with way too many processes and it becomes horrible and it's very difficult and everything's certain, including potentially the long drawn out death of the company. But, you know, let's assume that we're not there yet. But no, I completely agree. I think the only watch out though, and I think John Cutler was talking about this on Twitter the other day, the idea that taken to its extreme, that basically excuses a load of really poor behaviors by company leadership, like the fact that it's just so uncertain that actually the company could barely be accused of being actually functional. Yeah, it's a spectrum.
Right.
But at the same time, like, you don't want to hide behind the fact of, oh, it's really chaotic here. It's like, okay, right. So you don't have any idea what you're doing at all or whether this should even be a company. I think, you know, that's something that you need to be careful of. But I do agree that obviously in more uncertain early startups that you absolutely need to be able to kind of grasp the nettle to some extent and try and help make and shape it. So my number two, and it kind of touches a little bit on number one, or my number one, or our number one, and that's around communication skills. And, you know, I'm obviously struggling to get to the point here, so maybe I need to work on mine. But communication skills, I think, are so crucial for being an effective product manager, because you have to talk to so many people across all of those different functions, including, of course, going and talking to your customers, going and talking to the users, if those are two different sets of people, and basically being able to frame a message in a way that resonates with those people. So it's not about being fake or pretending to, you know, want to use certain words or pretending to empathize or anything like that. But you do need to potentially say something in a different way to resonate with an engineer compared to, say, the CEO. Like, they care about different things, as per the original point around motivations. Like, they're not gonna react the same way to the same types of thing. You know, I sat there once in a big important meeting talking to the CMO about, hey, we should really get this app rewritten into React because everyone's using React now and all the developers want to use it and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, that we absolutely should have done that. But at the same time, framing it in those terms to the CMO, he doesn't care. He'd never heard of React before, probably. It's not his fight and he needs that translated into business terms. And I think that's a really important thing, like having the ability to speak the language about what needs to get done in a way that really resonates with the people that need to buy into getting that done is crucial, because if you can't do that, you're either going to be seen as a kind of product management fundamentalist that's just quoting bits of book at people, or you're just going to bounce off of people entirely. Like, you'll say something that's actually really important and you'll have it all in your head about why this is so important, but it'll just bounce off and it'll never get done because you can't get buy-in because no one else understands what the heck you're talking about. So
yeah,
that's important.
I completely agree on this. And I literally had a conversation about this today around, we were talking about our weekly growth meeting and we were talking about like, what's the information that needs to be delivered to the team members who are in that meeting and how best can they consume that information.
Yeah.
And like really understanding, and this is really difficult because I think, you know, it's not just about the different sort of roles within the business and what they need from the information, but it's also about the unique kind of characteristics of certain people and how, you know, do they need visuals or do they need context and background, or do they just want the numbers? And like, learning that is quite difficult, but it's definitely a really great skill to develop, and also choosing the right tools for the job and the right, you know, frameworks or whatever for what you're trying to communicate. So I love this one.
Absolutely. So what's your third wish, so to speak?
Okay, so my third wish.
Imagine I'm some kind of product management genie.
I know, yeah. Is patience, but also restlessness, which I realize is a huge contradiction.
Well, you're well set up for the ambiguity of product management.
So, and this is, you know, there was, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a real theme at one of the Mind the Product conferences around resilience as a product manager. And I really enjoyed like hearing everyone talking about resilience as a product manager. And I never really thought about it much in the, kind of those terms. But, you know, I think there's a real challenge with product management where we are constantly challenged by, you know, making decisions, difficult decisions, like working with lots of people across the business who can sometimes be difficult people, or like, you know, just working through difficult problems and stuff. And I think, you know, as businesses change and grow, then, you know, it is rarely, in my experience, a kind of comfortable BAU sort of business as usual situation that you're in. And so having the patience to see those difficult times through and to be patient with other people when things get stressful, and also I guess a bit of patience with yourself as well. But then also not just sitting on your heels and letting other people deal with problems, like also a bit of restlessness of like, I want to get this thing done. Like, I want to see the impact that I'm pushing for. You know, I'm going to like keep on trying and, or keep on swimming, you know, as Dory says in Finding Nemo. So that's my third one, is kind of like, you know, the ability to be patient and not get sort of frustrated easily, and to like take stock in those moments of pressure, but also restless in a kind of desire for better, more, faster, all of that kind of stuff too. So yeah, I think I do that. And I think that the other good product managers that I've worked with do that as well. Do you do that?
Of course, I'm a fantastic product manager. No, I think for me, it's like, I agree, obviously, as well, completely this kind of a weird mix, but at the same time, those points are really valid. I think for me, almost being like the calm at the center of the storm to some extent. So I remember once talking to someone, he was like, I think I've been in the company not for too long, and he was like, how can you be so calm in this big release thing that we're doing? Like, everything feels like it's really stressful and hectic. And I just looked at him like, this is just how releasing software is, like, especially as in that situation where it was kind of a bit more of a monolith sort of batched up release or whatever, where you're kind of moving more stuff around. It's like, you know, we can all argue about the pros and cons of that, and I definitely wouldn't want to do that again, to be honest. But at the same time, as an actual piece of work, it wasn't really that bad. It was just, there was lots of stuff going on, had to be kind of calm in the middle of it. You kind of almost do have to project manage it a little bit from time to time as well, kind of just sort of stack all the pieces in the right area and make sure that they all have what they need, and then kind of step back and let them go at it and be there to support them. So I think that not just jumping in whenever something happens is really important, like not panicking, not treating everything as an emergency. These are all really important. But at the same time, yeah, the restlessness to actually try to make substantial change and actually make a difference, I think, is really important, because you should never be happy or satisfied with where you've got to, because, you know, products are never done, right? And well, unless again you have the inevitable death of the company, but that's a whole different point. And even then, they can live on as open source projects, maybe, who knows.
Okay, what's your number three? Are we on number three?
I think we are. Although I'm doing mine in different order, so just for reference. Okay, so my number three is, you have to be open and collaborative. You need to have a good mindset around this stuff. I mean, you see a lot of chat on Twitter and Reddit and other social media sites around like micromanaging sort of dictator PMs that are just there, just making people do stuff, throwing stuff over the fence and kind of complaining at people and cracking the whip to try and get them to do stuff faster, and just being really delivery focused and not worrying about the outcome, you know, just worrying about just stuff getting done and stuffing the sprints as full as possible. It's like, look, if you want to work like that, that's fantastic. I don't think it's the best way, and you're probably not going to get the best results, but hey, you do you, right? For me, I think being humble enough to sit there and say, I'm not the smartest person in the room. Like, I need the rest of you in the team to help me get to this place that we need to get to. I can tell you that we need to get there, but I need you to help me do that. I'm not going to tell you where we want to go and also how we're going to get there. And also, you know, hey, I used to be a developer. I'm sure nothing's changed since then. Let's make all of the technology choices that I would have made when I was a developer and do all that and like just dictate everything. I just don't think that that's efficient. And I think that anyone that does that needs to have a real mindset shift. You know, lots of coaching probably required to help get them into that space where they can start to trust. But also a lot of this is organizational as well. So we can't diminish the fact that it's not always easy to be like that if you're being pushed to be like that from leadership, from management, from whatever. But being open and collaborative rather than closed and dictatorial, I think is an absolutely crucial part of being any kind of product person, really, because if you don't do that, you're inevitably going to end up going down blind alleys. You're going to be sitting there saying, oh, hey, I've been here for a bit. I know how this all works and let's just do that. Or worse still, hey, I used to work for that type of company. I used to be the customer. Let's just go and do what I would have wanted when I was there. It's like, no, none of that actually makes any sense. If you want to make a big impact, and if you want to deliver the best solutions and build the best products, you need to bring in all of that expertise from all around the company and actually use it.
Yeah, I love that one. That one's really great. I once had a developer, he'd printed off like this A4 piece of paper that had like a picture of a monkey with the symbols. And it said something like, I am a coding monkey. And he like stuck it on his desk. I think he was really pissed off about something. And I was like, what the hell is this about? And he was like, well, I'm just doing what I'm told. And I was like, no. And I like took it off. I was like, don't, like, this is really bad. Whoever's made you feel like this, this is completely wrong. Like, I never want to see you feel like that ever again. And we managed to fix it and like, he was just having a moment of like crisis. But I think if anyone feels like that, that's like a really bad position to be in. If you're in a kind of product team, like everyone needs to feel you as a product manager, you have the capacity to make everyone feel valued and like their contribution is really important. Whether it's, you know, as a developer, it doesn't need to be just a technical contribution. It can be a UX contribution or a financial like commercial contribution. I love that thing of like not being the smartest person in the room as well.
That's easy for me. But also I think we have to call out that many developers, designers, and even product people may well be very much institutionalized by previous experience as well, right? So like,
yeah,
it's all very well for us to sit here, read inspired, read empowered, tell people that they should be empowered and they should be making these decisions. And look, I love those books, by the way. I'm not throwing any shade. But at the same time, I think Marty Kagan said it himself in some Ask Me Anything session that he did, like, not everyone's ready to do that. Like, you have to get them there as well. And as product people, we're able, as you say, to at least try to push people in that direction and push them to be able to or to be receptive to that type of ownership as well. Because if you've been sitting there being kind of thrown, having stuff thrown at you for the last 10 years of your career, never really able to speak up or say anything or do anything that you weren't told, then you get dropped into a company that wants to do things properly. They're not necessarily going to, like, or, you know, that developer may well be like, well, what does that even mean? Like, I want to do that, but actually I've been kind of beaten and brutalized for the last 10 years and now I can't actually work out what to do or what I'm allowed to do or where the limits of my power are. And I guess that's something because of an adjunct to that point is like, you need to have the ability as product people to drive that cultural change, not just within your company, but for the people that have come in from other companies that maybe are kind of suffering from sort of product PTSD.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So what's your next one?
Should I give you my fourth and final one?
Your fourth and final, because we like to keep things even around here. We steer clear of prime numbers in this on this podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say we're not odd.
Well, that'll also work. It's a little less geeky, I guess.
Okay, so my fourth and final one is another contradiction. So it's kind of two things, really. So it's high standards and the ability to be vulnerable. So I think the reason why I kind of phrased it like this is I think as a product manager, you know, pushing for those high standards and kind of pushing for things to be better and improved and having quite high standards yourself means that you're always on a mission to find like the best way to do things, or not even the best, but the better ways to do things. And part of product management is really sort of reflecting on the work that you're doing individually and as a team and as a business as well. And, you know, wanting it to be the best, but also being able to kind of reflect on it and see how you can improve it. So whether that's like a process or a document or a feature or a, you know, whatever it is. And then this ability to be vulnerable is really like you will not reflect thoroughly or properly on the thing unless you can be vulnerable. And, you know, we ran a retro today at work and, you know, it was quite a big project that involved the whole team. And in that retro, I was really like thinking, what could I have done better? Like in the areas that I contributed to this project, what were the bits that I didn't do so well on and that I, if I'd done it again, I'd be happier to, you know, I would do in a different way. And there was one bit of it that around like sharing. So I hadn't shared the design with more members of the team like earlier on, so they didn't see it till like later on down the line, and I was like, actually I did this and I feel bad about that and like I should have done that. So it's really kind of, you know, being able to be vulnerable yourself and have those high standards. So that's my number four. My number final one, I'll hand over to you. What do you think of that, and what's your number four?
I mean, I do agree. I think that vulnerability thing is really important. This whole concept of psychological safety, I guess, which everyone always talks about and everyone always claims to be aiming for, but I'm not sure everyone's quite hitting the mark. And I think it's difficult, right? Like, it's difficult for people, especially, again, if we think about maybe people that have come from other companies where they were getting kind of shouted at all the time or blamed whenever anything went wrong. It's difficult for people to come in then to an organization, even if you are psychologically safe or if you are able to be vulnerable, and actually feel safe to do that. So again, that's a big cultural piece where you can say, okay, well, how can we make that a reality? And yeah, it's going to take time, but I do think it's important, because ultimately, if everyone's just sitting there positioning and blaming each other all the time, then that's getting in the way of actually doing the work that you're supposed to be doing, right? Because actually, I mean, it's not who cares what went wrong. Obviously, you do care what went wrong, but it's not, you're not really going to be in a position where you're going to be improving if you're just like, you know, pulling the toenails out of someone that's made an honest mistake, right? Because they were trying to do the right thing. So I absolutely agree with that. So my last one is, it's somewhat related in a sense to this high standard concept, but I kind of frame it as a genuine curiosity about what's possible with technology, and importantly, how to connect that to your users' needs. So yeah, we all sit there and talk about discovery, and we absolutely should be doing as much of that as we can, but not just going in there with like a pre-baked idea or just accepting what it is that they say that they want and not doing some kind of due diligence of your own to sit there and say, well, actually, again, in conjunction with your engineers, this is the stuff that we could do for these people. This is how we could make their lives better. Now, we might not do all of those things, and we might strategically decide to point in different directions, or that things are too much effort, or the risk and reward don't match up or whatever. These are all fine discussions to have. But I think the worst thing that you can do, one of the worst things that you can do as a product manager, is just sit there and have like sacred cows and just assume that things have to be done in a certain way. And that's just the way it has to be, because either that's what our product does right now and it's too hard and complicated to change, or that's just what people have asked for so far. It's like, look, those things may all be true, but as a product manager, your job is to work out what the best future is that you can create for your users. And it doesn't have to be anything like the future that you've got now, whether you have to pivot the whole company or just add a new feature, deprecate a feature because it's confusing. There's lots of things that you could do, but having a really good open mind, again, as we said earlier, and actually being curious about where you could take it rather than just kind of going for the same thing again and again and again, I think, you know, that's absolutely critical for any good functional product manager.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, you need to know, you definitely need to know what's possible. And also, I think as part of that kind of genuine curiosity about what's possible with technology is, you end up, like, even if you don't have a kind of programming degree, or even if you do, actually, if you have this genuine curiosity and you're kind of asking questions of the developers, you're also able to sort of like hold them to account a little bit. I think I've definitely met
We said no blame.
No, I know. But there are definitely some engineers who hide a little bit behind the sort of technical language. And I think you can always ask questions in the right way that mean that no matter how complex something is technically, you should be able to understand it in kind of layman's terms and then understand then sort of how that impacts the work that you're doing and stuff like that as well. So yeah, it's good.
Absolutely. So normally at this point on some other podcast that I've heard of, I might do something along the lines of say, oh, hey, Lily, where can people find you next if they want to find out more or catch up and share their opinions about product management? Of course, this is your podcast and everyone knows where to find you. So I guess I'll just ask, who's up next? Have we got any exciting guests on the way or any people that you're really stoked to be talking about?
Oh my goodness, we do have loads more amazing guests coming up, but I don't have the calendar in front of me, so I can't see who it is. But it has been an absolute pleasure being interviewed by you, Jason. Thank you so much for coming on board to do that job.
No problem. I'll talk at the opening of an envelope, you know me. Well, thanks very much, Lily. It's been a pleasure. And may all of you out there, all of you listeners, continue to be the best product managers you can be.
Yay. The Product Experience is the first
and the best
podcast from Mind the Product. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith,
and me, Randy Silver.
Lou Ron Pratt is our producer and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arnie Kittler, who curates both Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and who also plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. You can connect with your local product community via Product Tank, regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, maybe you should think about starting one. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.